Does Not Compute would like to thank today's sponsor, Imagix. Imagix has honestly changed how I think about images when I'm building websites and apps. This is image processing as a service, so here's how it works. You upload your photos to S3 or wherever you normally would, just like before. But to access the images, you point Imagix to your image location and then use their special URLs to make changes. This lets you handle basic stuff like cropping and rotation, as well as do some really cool advanced things, such as blend modes, watermarks, embedded text, automatic face detection, color palette generation, and more. They actually just released a new automatic point of interest cropping feature that I've been using a lot lately. It's very smart. You just update your image URLs and there you go. Beautiful, automatically edited images. There's no more worrying about a custom image magic pipeline or uploading a bunch of different thumbnail sizes. You just provide your original image and make any changes on the fly directly in the URL. You can, of course, write these URLs by hand, but if you want to get fancy, they've got a bunch of libraries to help, and almost certainly one in whichever language you happen to be using. That includes Ruby, Python, PHP, Go, Objective-C, Swift, and even more. All of this is CDN-backed, and it's blazing fast. In fact, their average response time is under 70 milliseconds. Sean and I both really enjoy using Imagix. That's IMGIX, by the way. And we think you will too. We've got a link to their site in the show notes, so make sure to take a peek at that. Also, when you sign up for Imagix, they give your account a $10 credit, so there's really no excuse. You should definitely give them a try. Do we have anything usable yet?
I honestly have no idea.
Like anything coherent?
Do you just want to start over?
I think it might be faster.
It's been real choppy.
So how's Flatticons coming? You getting any closer with that?
Yeah. Yeah, I'm definitely getting...
Yeah. Yes, yeah. I am.
I need to close the blinds because
you,
I keep
Paul.
Freaking seeing stuff outside and I look at it. Yeah, I'm getting closer. So last night I spent some time and I implemented infinite scrolling across the searching UIs. And it actually increased performance on those screens by so much. Initially, to kind of get that same feel, I had to load just a lot of icons, right? So that way you can scroll and see a good number of icons. And what was happening was in the background, so you would hit that route and the route would go to the controller. The controller would get, say, 500 icons, turn that into JSON, and then the view components would grab that JSON and render out 500 views. And that, it was okay. It wasn't super fast. But by implementing infinite scrolling, I could knock down the number of icons returned from 500 to, say, 60, which I believe that's 10 rows worth of icons, which definitely takes up the entire screen. And so obviously 60 icons is going to load way faster than 500. So the initial loading screen is way quicker, searching is way faster, and now you can just scroll and it just keeps loading in icons.
That's pretty cool, and I think it actually brings up a really good point. A lot of people over the last while now have been talking about whether or not designers should learn about development or whether or not designers should develop as part of their job.
Right.
And I think it's a great counterpoint to that. Should developers understand design? And from where I'm standing, the answer is absolutely 100% yes.
I completely agree with that, especially front-end developers.
Right. Because if you're ever dealing with having stuff handed over from a designer, there's going to come a time, or probably several times, where something wasn't fully thought out. And through no fault of the designers, but just because when you're building large websites or applications, it can be difficult to figure out exactly how every single flow in the app is going to work.
Building and designing an application is a huge undertaking because there's always things you didn't think about. There's always situations that, I mean, really, they can only come up through building the app, right? And so you kind of have to solve that on the fly. And having a developer that's able to riff off of the design and build something that looks pretty decent, I think that saves time because then you can take that back to the designer and say, hey, this is what I've come up with. And instead of having to basically reskin this whole feature that you might have just implemented, you know, maybe it just needs a few tweaks instead.
Right. That makes a lot of sense, especially, I don't know how this works at other agencies, But at Octopus, a lot of times once development has really kicked off, the designer might actually be on another project.
Sure.
So if you can take what they did and then kind of mutate it a little bit to get to a solution for something new, then you can just run that by them for quick approval, and it doesn't actually require them to drop what they're doing and switch context back to the older project. So it's a big time saver.
Right, and it allows you to keep working on what you're doing as well. So there's not a blocking issue on both sides. What I end up doing usually is if I run into something like that, I will create issues on our GitLab server, and I will assign. So I'll come up with a little kind of in progress solution, and then I'll either make like maybe a GIF of that or a video cap of that, and I'll put it in that issue, and then I'll tag the designer and say, "Hey, what do you think about this? This is an issue that I'm running into, and this is how I'm solving it right now. What are your thoughts?" And you know, sometimes the designer comes back with, "Well, what if what if we did this instead, or can we change this font size, or, you know, just kind of visual tweaks." But most of the time they respond with, "That looks pretty good."
Right. And that just makes life easier for everybody.
Yeah.
I think another place where it's really useful for developers to have some design knowledge is in animation. A lot of times, unless your design team is heavily into prototyping, which I know some design teams are now, and that's awesome. But if they aren't, or if there's not time to prototype an animation and then implement it, you can save some time and take some burden off the designers by doing the animation on the dev side. If there's a solid understanding there, there's not really any reason why you shouldn't do it there.
Right. And I've actually seen some prototypes that look really nice, but when they're thrown into the actual working site, they may not exactly fit just right. So it's really nice for me as a developer to come in and tweak these prototypes and then go back to the designer and say, "Hey, what do you think about this? It was kind of feeling off a little bit, and this is how I adjusted it. What do you think?"
Sure, because if you're prototyping an animation in isolation from the rest of the app, like let's say you're doing it in Framer or whatever the cool kids are using these days, you build that animation out and it's totally separate from everything else. There's no context for it in a way.
Yeah.
So I think that's actually a big help when you can make the animation in the context of the rest of the built out application and see it and touch it on your phone while actually using the app. In some ways that actually makes designing animations a lot easier.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. And you know, another thing along the same lines is that if you're able to do that sort of thing, it just makes you a better asset for your team.
Absolutely. And I think another really important thing for developers to have is just that really solid attention to detail.
You know, actually, that is how I got a lot of my freelance work. People would just say that I had a good attention to detail, and that sold me over programmers that were maybe more technically skilled than I was. Actually, I think part of the reason I even got my job at Octopus was because I had a little bit of a design background, and I paid attention to the design things while I was programming.
Yeah, it's so important. Whether you're working in an agency setting or you're working freelance or whatever, it makes such a big difference in the end implementation, because a beautiful design that's implemented okay is just going to be okay.
Right.
But a good design that's implemented superbly is going to be pretty great. So having that attention to detail, picking up on little subtleties and making sure that everything just fits together and is cohesive, that's so, so important, because it just elevates the entire project.
It's kind of funny to say this, but I used to have a mentality of being at war with designers sometimes. So when I'm working on a design that they've put together, I would see things and maybe want to slack off a little bit and then say, "Well, you know, this is over the top, or this isn't necessary anyway." But you know, I've worked really hard to correct that way of thinking, because they're on my team. You know, we're working for the same company, and we're building a product, and we want that thing to be really well done, right? So I've worked really hard to correct my thinking in that and not cut corners and really pay attention to the details and implement things correctly.
It just makes everything turn out so much better.
You know, on the other side of the coin with Flaticons, I've been trying to implement some interactions that, you know, make things more performant. But on the back end side of things, I've really been trying to wrap my head around concerns and using what are they called? PORO's, plain old Ruby objects.
Yep.
Yeah, I've been trying to wrap my head around that more, and I feel like I'm almost there. Like, I get the idea of it, but practically applying that to the application is proving to be a little bit of a challenge for me.
So how are you working through that?
Slowly. I have a number of a few things that I try to do when I feel like that. I guess, so when I try to learn too many things at once, I have sort of this mental fog going on. I don't know if you've ever experienced that, but...
Every day.
So it's like if you're trying to close a drawer and there's something behind the drawer and the drawer just doesn't close all the way, it's just almost there, but not quite. That's what I feel like right now. And one thing I can practically do that is maybe cut some other things out. I've also been focusing a lot on Vue and trying to up my JavaScript game. So I kind of asked myself this morning, what are the things that I need to learn right now that could provide me the most benefit? And I have a few Ruby projects coming up at work. So the answer was, as cool as I think Vue is, you know, take a step back from that and really focus on some more of these Ruby paradigms. And that's one thing I'm really bad at, is trying to bite off more than I can chew at once. But a surefire way to kind of beat that mental fog is to pare things down.
So what are you focusing on right now?
So right now there are a few pieces of the Flaticons app that share functionality. So you can search for icons from the admin. So when you search in the admin panel, you get all the icons and not just a subset of the icons sets that you own. So there's a user dashboard where you can search in the admin dashboard, and they're almost identical except for the user dashboard being a filtered subset. So I'm wanting to take some of that duplicated code and put it into a module, so that way it's not duplicated. I can test it in one spot, and if I have to change it, I change it in one spot.
I think a real turning point for me personally in understanding concerns in Rails was reading through the source code. And I know we talk about this all the time, but reading the source code in this case is a super, super good idea, because the source code for concerns is really, it's like 100 lines. And it exposes exactly what the differences are between a concern and a module. And it's all just syntactical sugar. So seeing the actual difference laid out in Ruby code just really helped that concept click for me. Because when they were first announced, I was kind of like, I don't understand why you would use this. I don't really quite get what the point is. We already have modules. But there's some really nice stuff. And it just, reading the source code made that so much clearer for me.
Yeah, I know we harp on that, but I haven't done it. So maybe this afternoon I'll go and take my own advice and go and do that.
You should go back and listen to episode 5. I think we have some good advice for you on that.
Yeah, I'll definitely have to do that. But I don't know. I feel like I'm right on the hump of this stuff. And once I get it, you know, the products that I work on will be better. The Ruby that I have coming up that I'm going to have to write is going to be more organized. And eventually when that gets handed off to a team of some sort, they'll thank me for that, you know? So I don't know. It's just something really important that I feel like I need to do. And I think that point, Paul, that you mentioned of looking at the source code and then seeing just the plain old Ruby is really important too. Because maybe another way that might help me grasp this is just going back to plain old Ruby without all the Rails magic and kind of wiring up a test case for that. Create a class and then create a model that gets pulled in, which is plain old Ruby, and see how that works and mess around with it.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. It's kind of like a test case. Like you said, doing the simplest possible version of a thing often is illuminating.
Yeah.
So kind of in keeping with our how do I get started? How do I keep improving? How do I learn all this stuff theme that we've had going on for a little bit now? You actually linked me this web dev challenge repository on GitHub, which is awesome. There's so much cool stuff in here. This is amazing. So basically, this is just it's really simple. The entire repository is just a single markdown file. And it's just a list of stuff that you can do. So I guess the idea is that you fork the repository, and then the markdown file has a GitHub checklist built into it. As you go through and do each of these things, you can just check them off and kind of keep track of your progress. And this has all sorts of different stuff. It's got everything from JavaScript to PHP to like authentication kind of stuff, CSS. It's all over the place, but they're all really, really useful things to know how to do.
Yeah, the majority of things on this list I've actually done for multiple projects. So when I was first learning, I remember asking you, Paul, a lot of questions, and you would just say, just build something. And I would always say, well, I don't know what to build, which is silly because there's a million different examples out there now. But this, you know, if you find yourself in that position where you're wanting to learn something new or wanting to get into programming and you don't know exactly what to do, this is a list of things that you can build, but would also be useful experience that for the long haul.
Definitely. A lot of these things are things that I have to do every single project. Create a sticky header, create a sticky footer, vertically center a div. And that's just CSS stuff. This is kind of incredible. It's so many things that aren't just like arbitrary exercises.
Yeah, I mean, they cover CSS, CMSs, you know, set up a, I wouldn't do the Drupal one unless you're into that sort of thing. But they have, you know, WordPress examples, API examples, like add API authentication, document your API, create a web that lets authenticated users post tweets to your Twitter account. That's all really good things to learn how to do, because all that stuff might come into play down the road while doing client work or building applications or what have you. So essentially, by doing these, you're adding knowledge to your toolbox that you can use at any time.
Yeah, I actually hadn't seen this before. This is kind of awesome. In the JavaScript section, it says, you know, create an image slider, create a floating sticky element, use some Ajax to do some stuff. And then there's a few other things. But then down near the bottom of the JavaScript section, it says, redo the exercises using jQuery.
Yeah.
I think that's so cool.
Or on the other side, redo them without jQuery.
Right. Yep.
That's really great. It also says build a simple multi-page app using Angular, build a date picker. I know you just did that, Paul. But I mean, these exercises, so for example, say you already know JavaScript and you want to learn Angular, do some of these in Angular, build a date picker with Angular. If you want to learn React, build a date picker using React. So these examples are things that, I mean, they're not just things that you do once and kind of let sit on the shelf. They're things that you can reuse.
Absolutely. And there's no reason, even if you are new, we've kind of talked about how it can be intimidating to release open source stuff in the past. But this is just kind of something where you can make these things and release them. And you can even say, I made this for Web Dev Challenge. And everybody's going to be stoked on that because that's super cool. Actually, if you do any of these things, totally let us know in the Spec Slack or on Twitter. We'd love to see what everybody's coming up with.
Yeah, I would really love to take a look at that stuff.
Another big thanks to Imgix for sponsoring Does Not Compute. Imgix eliminates the headache of dealing with images on the web. Just by changing the URL, you can crop, rotate, and do a bunch of advanced stuff all on the fly. We've got a link to their site in the show notes, so make sure to take a look at that. When you do, check out their sandbox tool. It lets you play around with all of the features in a really neat GUI. Thanks so much for listening, and we hope you enjoyed this episode. As always, iTunes ratings are much appreciated, and just take a couple seconds.